If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? This is Foundations, the radio ministry of Oak Hill Presbyterian Church, Sonora, California. We welcome you to our Sunday morning worship services under the leadership of Pastor David Bush. Stay tuned following today's program for more information about Oak Hill Presbyterian Church. Here now is today's message from Pastor Bush.
Okay, if you have your Bibles, we're going through Deuteronomy 33, and we left off last week rather hastily, considering something of that pastoral heart of Moses as he is pouring out these blessings upon the tribes of Israel. And we noted a few things that I want to remind you of. That's something that we have to keep as sort of a backdrop to these blessings is the idea that God had warned in Exodus 20 and verse 5 that he is a God who visits the iniquity of the fathers on the children on the third and fourth generation of those who hate him. And here Moses is about to die. He's at a place where he's going to have to think about what is the future of the Israelites. Their fathers were sinners. And we have examples of that preserved for us in Scripture. We also note that they themselves had already established a record of a people who were rebellious. In chapter 31, we note that both God and Moses are on record as saying, you are going to rebel. You're going to break covenant with God. You're going to go after the gods of the pagans and so forth. And so when you do that, you are going to reap God's curses upon you. And so Moses is closing out with that in the back of his mind. We also noted that there is a similarity between Jacob's blessing of these 12 tribes in Genesis 49 and what Moses is doing here. There are some differences in one sense that Jacob seems to be proclaiming the future of these Israelite tribes, where Moses is entering into more of a pronouncement of blessings upon them. But anyhow, it is a similar closing of lives that address these 12 tribes. And then we also noted that Moses is saying goodbye in the full sense of where we get that word, that contraction of God be with ye, or goodbye today, is really his blessing upon them, that God would be with them in his mercy as they go into the land. And so this is what we are considering today. I want to just kind of briefly touch upon each of the tribes and something of what is in these blessings. Again, not being able to exhaust all the details here. So let's start with point A on your outline, Reuben. In Deuteronomy 33:6, Moses prays, may Reuben live and not die, nor his men be few. Remember how Jacob had addressed Reuben in his time of closing of his life, where Jacob denies the birthright to Reuben, who was his firstborn child. In verse 3 of Genesis 49, we read, Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, preeminent in dignity, preeminent in power, uncontrolled as water. You shall not have preeminence because you went up to your father's bed. Then you defiled it. He went up to my couch. And remember that story in Genesis 35, where Reuben had gone into Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, and after her death had become Jacob's concubine. And Jacob holds Reuben accountable for his violation of the purity laws of God. Thou shalt not commit adultery. And notice that that wasn't even given to the Jews yet. That law had not formally been given to them, and yet Reuben is held accountable for his adultery. And Moses here, notice though, Moses is praying that God would be gracious to the tribe of Reuben, that there would be a multiplied descendants of Reuben, that he would multiply them, that his men would not be few. Again, Deuteronomy 28 blessings, one of the blessings that God promised is that he would prosper the people with an abundance of children. That was one of his blessings. And so here Moses is praying for the tribe of Reuben to be blessed and not cursed. Judah, in point B, is a second one. And here, again, we see this desired blessing. We see this through all the tribes. And remember, Judah himself was not a virtuous man in the full. He had refused to give his son Shelah to Tamar. Remember that story there, and where Tamar eventually dresses up as a harlot, and Judah goes into her, gives her his pledge, his staff, his signet ring, and his cord. And eventually it comes out that Tamar is pregnant, and Judah is incensed at her sin, and eventually it comes out that she's pregnant by Judah. And when she makes that public, we remember Judah's confession publicly where he says, "She is more righteous than I." But here was a father of this tribe, has this recorded sin. But note how Moses prays for the tribe of Judah. He says, regarding Judah, verse 7, "Hear, O Lord, the voice of Judah, and bring him to his people. With his hands he contended for them, and may you be a help against his adversaries." See, here Moses is praying for this tribe, that God would protect them, that he would protect them from their enemies. Again, you hear this echo of Deuteronomy 28, the blessings. One of the blessings that God had promised is that he would protect them from their enemies. And of course, this is the tribe that our Lord will come from. And so this tribe to be blessed, that the Messiah would come, that Shiloh would come from this tribe, as we read in Genesis 49. Moving on to Levi, see on your outline, starting in verse 8, here's a more lengthy blessing of Levi. He said, "Let your Thummim and your Urim belong to your godly man, whom you proved at Massah, with whom you contended at the waters of Meribah, who said of his father and his mother, 'I did not consider them,' and he did not acknowledge his brothers, nor did he regard his own sons, for they observed your word and kept your covenant. They shall teach your ordinances to Jacob and your law to Israel. They shall put incense before you and whole burnt offerings on your altar. O Lord, bless his substance and accept the work of his hands. Shatter the loins of those who rise up against him and those who hate him, so that they will not rise up again." And so here Moses is now praying for the priestly line of the tribes of Judah. And he desires that their labors in not only offering of the sacrifices, but also in the instruction ministry that the Levites had to instruct in the way of the law, that God would bless them and further bless them in those endeavors, but also that he would permanently destroy their enemies. You notice in terms of the blessings for the teaching and the sacrifice. And again, all this in spite of what Levi had done with Simeon. Remember how Levi and Simeon conspired together to kill the Shechemites and then to loot their villages when Shechem had those wrong relations with Dinah, their sister, and brought shame upon the family. But Moses here wants to recognize that they were at least obedient in the wilderness when they stood up against their brothers and condemned them when they were engaging in the worship of the golden calf. That's the reference there in verse 9 when he said of his father and his mother, "I did not consider them," and he did not acknowledge his brothers, "nor did he regard his own sons, for they observed your word and kept your covenant." That there they remained faithful and condemned the idolatry. And so Moses now wants this Thummim and Urim, which is a reference to the casting of lots. We know that those lots, that the Thummim and the Urim was lost in the destruction of the first temple, did not come back when the second temple was built. But here Moses is asking that God would continue to show his will through this tribe, That in other words, that the casting of the lots that was the determination of God's will, that that would still be prevalent in the tribe of Levi. Now, Matthew Henry draws a different understanding there. I'll give you his understanding. He sees that the Thummim literally has the idea of integrity behind it, and the Urim has insight or illumination. So that insight and illumination and integrity would belong to Levi. But you see, this tribe was the instructive. They were the teachers. They were the ones who offered the sacrifices. And that the prayer here is that God would continue to bless them in those endeavors. And then, again, in verse 11, this imprecatory prayer against their enemies. This is a wonderful topic of study, these imprecatory prayers that we find in the Psalms, where the righteous pray for the destruction of their enemies. Is that legitimate for Christians to pray an imprecatory prayer? A great, great discussion ensues from that. But notice this prayer of Moses. O Lord, bless his substance and accept the work of his hands. Shatter the loins of those who rise up against him and those who hate him so that they will not rise up again. Just praying for the destruction of their enemies. Very interesting. Point D would be Benjamin. Verse 12, Benjamin, Moses says, may the beloved of the Lord dwell in security by him who shields him all the day, and he dwells between his shoulders. We know Benjamin was the youngest of the tribe. His name literally means son of my right hand. This was the beloved son of Jacob. Remember how Rachel had died giving birth to Benjamin, and so this is his precious son that he wanted to preserve from going into Egypt when Joseph was there and so forth. And so here, though in my translations, and you might want to look at yours, I think the New American Standard Version makes a wrong emphasis. And what's going on here is this language that, and he dwells between his shoulders. We have both, you have these two pronouns, he and his. Now, one of those is a reference to God, and the other is a reference to Benjamin and as a tribe. So, who is who in this sort of ambiguous statement, and he dwells between his shoulders? Is it that Reuben dwells between God's shoulders, or is it God dwells between Reuben's shoulders? The argument is this. The tribe of Reuben, of course, is near Jerusalem, and so the thought is that God dwells between his shoulders in terms of the territory at the temple. He's sort of the head, and Reuben is the shoulder. So God dwells among the shoulders of Reuben. The other would be to see that Reuben is the head over God. He dwells between the shoulders of God, which is kind of hard for me to see that as the thrust here. Or how is it that Reuben is dwelling between the shoulders of God? And yet that's how it seems the New American Standard translate this, that he is not capitalized. He dwells between his capitalized shoulders. I just don't think that's it. If the head is the object here that is between the shoulders, then I would argue that God is the first referent and Benjamin the second, and that it is God, notice it, is he who shields him all the day, and that may the beloved of the Lord dwell in security by him. And so I would argue that God is the one that has the headship, the rule over Reuben. So anyhow, of interest, King Saul and the Apostle Paul, both from this tribe of Benjamin. The next blessing goes to Joseph, and here is a rather lengthy blessing. In fact, this is the largest of the blessings of Joseph. He said, blessed of the Lord be his land, with the choice things of heaven, with the dew, and from the deep lying beneath, and with the choice yield of the sun, and with the choice produce of the months, and with the best things of the ancient mountains, and with the choicest things of the everlasting hills, and with the choice things of the earth and its fullness, and the flavor, and the favor of him who dwelt in the bush, let it come to the head of Joseph, and to the crown of his head of the one distinguished among his brothers. As the firstborn of his ox, majesty is his, and his horns are the horns of a wild ox. With them he will push the people all at once to the ends of the earth, and those are the 10,000s of Ephraim, and those are the 10,000s of Manasseh. So in verse 16, there's this language that he is distinguished among his brothers. The idea of the Greek literally is he is separated from his brothers. But then that puts us into a challenge. How is Joseph separated from his brothers? You know, again, we're dealing with the tribe. We also have this reference to Joseph as an individual. But remember, is he separated in the sense that the brothers separated him in selling him as a slave? Or is he separated in that God had separated Joseph in making him holy where his brothers were evil or wicked? But so he is separate from his brothers in some sense. But here this prayer for the crown of his head and that the blessings from the one who dwelt in the bush, Moses, remember, had the angel of the Lord speaking from the bush, that God, in the form of that, the angel of the Lord comes speaking in the burning bush to him. And Moses here is saying, may this one bless Joseph. May that one that appeared to me appear to him and pour out his blessings upon him. And in particular, an agricultural prosperity, that the land, the dews of heaven and so forth, that's verse 13 through 16, and that they would have a military might to overcome their enemies in verse 17, that like this ox that is pushing them with the horns to the ends of the earth, that the enemies would not be able to withstand. Again, echoes of that blessing of Deuteronomy 28. In all of these examples that God would give those blessings that were promised, the bread basket that would be multiplied, the prosperity that is promised for those who would obey. Point F, he says to Zebulun and Issachar, sort of bringing these two tribes together. In verse 18 of Zebulun, he said, rejoice, Zebulun, in your goings forth, and Issachar, in your tents. They will be called peoples. They will call peoples to the mountains. There they will offer righteous sacrifices, for they will draw out the abundance of the seas and the hidden treasures of the sand. So here, we see that Zebulun and Issachar are going to become tribes that will become prosperous in terms of their fishing enterprises and their seagoing ventures, and also in their homelands, apparently derived great wealth according to Hebrew tradition. And then also Gad is in your point G on your outline, verse 20 and 21. Of Gad, he said, blessed is the one who enlarges Gad. He lies down as a lion and tears the arm, also the crown of the head. Then he provided the first part for himself, for there the ruler's portion was reserved. And he came with the leaders of the people. He executed justice of the Lord and his ordinances with Israel. So here the Israelites, it's interesting, are in the territory of Gad as they are about to cross over the Jordan River. Remember, Gad was on the eastern side of the Jordan River, so they're actually in Gad's territory. And Moses now is blessing not only this tribe, but this extends to anyone who would help to broaden the territories, to bless Gad with greater strength and influence, that anyone who blessed them, that they too would be blessed. And so this blessing to Gad here, notice there's an echo of that they would lie down as a lion and would tear apart with fierceness of a lion, as a lion would mangle its victims, that Gad would take care of its enemies the same way. Then, let's see, H is Dan. Dan is a lion's whelp that leaps forth from Bashan. Very interesting when Jacob had blessed Dan, he gave reference to him as being the serpent that lies in the path and strikes the horse from behind, causing it to rear up and the rider to fall down. There seems to be an echo here that Dan is a lion's whelp that leaps forth from Bashan. Now, we tend to not look at the geography in our maps in the back of the Bible and understand all of this stuff. But when you look at Dan, Dan is in the southern region of Israel. It's just above Judah, right sort of on a latitude with Jerusalem. And we know that Dan, the city of Dan, is way in the uppermost regions of Israel. We say from Dan to Beersheba, right? And Bashan is way over in the very northeast of Israel. So how is it that he leaps from Bashan? It's interesting, if you go back to Judges 18, you'll see some of the history of how that city got its name Dan. And that is that Dan, even though it was a very southern tribe, had marched all the way up to the northern parts of Bashan and sneak attacked with 600 men, took over Laish, and renamed it Dan. But they took over Laish primarily because Laish was a very standoffish city, that they didn't really have any relations with their neighbors. They were kind of an island to themselves, didn't have the strength of allies. And so they were sitting ducks. And Dan went all the way up through Israel, all the way to the north, and attacked them. And that's how Dan got its name. So we think of Dan in the very northernmost region, even though it's a very southern territory. It's a very interesting dynamic there. So literally sort of fulfills that idea. Well, maybe I've got time to read. I have a quote that came out of Matthew Henry again. He said, "To a more general achievement of that tribe, when a party of them upon information brought them to the security of Laish, which lay in the furthest part of the land of Canaan from them, surprised it and soon made themselves masters of it. And the mountains of Bashan lying not far from that city, probably thence they made their descent upon it and therefore are here said to leap from Bashan." So there he's given reference to that Judges 18 story, arguing that they came from Bashan. So interesting history there. Naphtali, point I. Of Naphtali, verse 23, O Naphtali, satisfied with favor and full of blessing of the Lord, take possession of the sea and of the south. Again here, Naphtali, we know is a northern tribe, a northern area. They border half of the Sea of Galilee. In Genesis 49, Jacob had blessed Naphtali, saying that their bread would be abundant and that they would yield royal dainties. So some agricultural aspects to them. Their bread baskets would be full. Again, the blessings of God, and in this case here, the sea, and to the south, that they would too extend their territory, extend their influence. One of the Jewish traditions tells us that the portion of the tribe of Naphtali was so fruitful and its productions were so forward that though it lay in the north, that those of that tribe were generally were the first ones to have the fruit to bring in as their first fruit offerings to the temple, and that they would be the first to receive the blessings of the priests upon them. So they're a very prosperous people. So Naphtali's blessings. Point J, 24 and 25. Of Asher, he said, more blessed than sons of Asher, may he be favored by his brothers, and may he dip his foot in oil. Your locks will be iron and bronze, and according to your days, so will your leisurely walk be. Here, I would just say that there are some blessings that are poured upon Asher. One for peace. Notice that there would be favorable relations with their neighbors. Moses is praying for their prosperity, that they would have an abundance of resources, actually dipping their feet in the oil or the olive oil, because the production of the oil would be high. In verse 25, you have your locks will be iron and bronze. Some of your translations there may speak of their shoes or their sandals being as iron or bronze. The reason there is in the Hebrew words, you don't have vowels. You have just a three-consonant word base, and the three consonants are the same for shoe or for locks. And so depending on your vowel pointing, you would have different words there. So there's a judgment call. Now, my take is that I think locks is a better translation, primarily because it's the bronze, iron, and gates, the locks, that would be a protection that Moses is praying for their safety, not that their shoes wouldn't wear out or some other idea about the bronze shoes. So I think locks would be the preferable translation. And this leisurely walks, I think, is a blessing for longevity, that they would, we know that you can take leisurely walks when you get old. You can't take the brisk walks when you get old. But if your longevity would be akin to your leisurely walks, then it's that, you know, all the way to your old age, that you would just have an extended lifetime. I think that's the point there. Okay, so that's going to leave us with point K. We're out of tribes. What happens in point K? This isn't a blessing, but Moses addresses God lastly. Verses 26 and following, notice this doxology that Moses gives to us on this. There is none like the God of Jehuran, which is literally Israel in the Hebrew, the God of Israel. So if you have that translation, and my translation sounds very jarred. There is none like the God of Israel, who rides the heavens to your help, and through the skies of his majesty, the eternal God is a dwelling place, and under are the everlasting arms. And he drove out the enemy from before you and said, destroy. So Israel dwells in security. The foundation of Jacob secluded in a land of grain and new wine. His heavens also drop down dew. Blessed are you, O Israel. Who is like you? A people saved by the Lord, who is the shield of your help and the sword of your majesty. So your enemies will cringe before you and you will tread upon their high places. What a glorious doxology. I wish I could land on this a little bit longer. I hate to rush through this, but I want you just to see something about the praise and the glory of this God, who his mercy has reached and given Israel this privileged status. And it is one that he's saying, and now you go and you destroy the enemies. You be the victors. You take out those who are offending me. Now we realize our battle today is much different. We don't fight with flesh and blood. Our battle is a spiritual battle. We battle with the gospel, the sword of the Spirit, that we battle against our enemies by bringing them to their submission to King Jesus, that they must bow to our King. They must give allegiance to our God. They must surrender to their Creator and their Redeemer, the one who alone brings salvation. And so we see that in this, there is a call in all of Deuteronomy. A call here that, you remember, this was all read on one occasion. Fresh in the minds of these people would be the hearing of that law and their call over and over and over and over to their obedience to this law. That if they want to live in harmony with this God, if they want his blessings, then you must do what he says. You must follow his ways. And that that obedience is always tied to the grace that you are here by grace. We too stand as a people delivered from our Egyptian bondage, from our sin. We stand as a people who are where we are by grace, that God has saved us from our sin and our misery. And that like these Israelites are called to give our allegiance in light of that grace to show our love for God. And the sweet thing is that these blessings will flow to those who will take hold of Christ and follow their Creator's demands.
Thanks for listening to Foundations, the radio ministry of Oak Hill Presbyterian Church. Our church is located at the corner of Mono Way, Highway 108, and Peaceful Valley Road in East Sonora, California. The church with the crosses. Our weekly worship service begins at 9:45 a.m. We would be delighted to have you join us as we worship Almighty God, explore His Word, and fellowship in Christian love. If you would like a copy of today's message or more information about Oak Hill, please visit our website at oakhillopc.org.